Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Well, good morning, Mo.
Morning.
I don't know if you're at a place where you have your cup of Joe, but I have mine.
Fortunately, I ran to this, so no, I don't have it with me, but I'll get it right after.
I think we both had some time issues with our brains and our routines. But today we've got a really important group of individuals to discuss, the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery, who is going to be celebrating 90 years. And full disclosure for the audience, I served 10 years as a director of the board. So I'm all in into the board and its importance in certifying and assuring the public that the people that carry this seal of certification are ethical and equipped and ready to give them excellent care. So we have David Martin, the executive director of the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery. We have David Elstein, who is the manager of education and communication. And we have Fred Azar, who probably needs not too much introduction for most of our audience, a renowned sports physician and past president of the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery, who has been given the charge of organizing this celebration of 90 years. But if I could, Dr. Martin, can you just tell the audience about what the board is and how it all got started?
Sure. Good morning. Thank you for having us on. The board had its origins in 1934. Really, we trace back to the late 1800s when the leadership organization in orthopedic surgery, the American Orthopedic Association, made up of orthopedic leaders, saw in its vision that there ought to be a membership society and formed the Academy, American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons in 1933. But also thought that there ought to be a certification body, separate, independent, and along with the Academy, the AOA, and the AMA, the American Medical Association, formed the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery in 1934 and had three representatives from each of those organizations. And since that time, the board has certified orthopedic surgeons, and our mission really has not changed since 1934. I mean, we're looking for safe, ethical, and effective practice of orthopedic surgery, and we try and measure that and assess that in the best ways possible, not only to increase the value of board certification, but also to decrease the burden on our diplomates.
Well, thanks. And if I recall right, there are 24 members of the American Board of Medical Specialties. Is that still correct, David?
That's correct. Yes. 24 members. And, yes.
Yeah. And if also if I'm recalling correctly, I think orthopedics was like the third board that formed of the ultimate 24.
Yes, there are 24 member boards in the American Board of Medical Specialties, and orthopedic surgery was in the first four that formed the at that time called the Advisory Board of Medical Specialties. Now the American Board of Medical Specialties. And now there are 24 member boards that provide board certification for nearly a million physicians in the United States.
Yeah. Well, I brought that up just to point out to the audience that as with many things in medicine, orthopedics was at the front end, not a follower, a leader. So Mo, you are not an American. You're Canadian.
Yep.
You're certified. Yep. In Canada. And I also know that you have some experience in Hong Kong. So just for comparison, how does certification work in Canada and Hong Kong, if you've got time?
Sure. So, I mean, very quickly, in Canada, it's the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada. And that's the certifying body for trainees. The trainees complete their exams, complete their in-training. They get a report or what's called a sort of a final in-training resident evaluation called a FITER. That document, along with a written, a comprehensive written evaluation at the end of their five-year training program, as well as, and it used to be OSCE style, but more of a case-based, but there used to be some OSCE questions as well, OSCE style questions, a comprehensive set of questions, again, right at the end of residency training. Both of those two have to be passed along with a successful in-training evaluation from their programs to be able to be fully certified. We haven't really had any further discussions around, you know, tenure recertification for surgeons and things like that. But the process is pretty similar. Now in Hong Kong, the Hong Kong College of Orthopedic Surgery, for example, they have a group come in from the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh, and they run the programs very similar to what's happening throughout the United Kingdom. And so those are similar, again, very comprehensive written, and they have actual live, well, I'd say a simulated scenarios, but also live patients where they're evaluated for short and long cases in front of the patient evaluated. So there's a different set of approaches, but again, the certification occurs at the time, and it's a comprehensive evaluation across all of orthopedics.
Yeah, that's great. Fred, if I could ask you, could you just refresh our non-US listeners, how's the process work with our board?
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having us. You know, for our board, I think everyone is aware of the part one exam, which is a written exam that once you finish your residency and your program director signs off on you, you're allowed to sit for that. And then 2 years into practice, and usually that's 3 years out because you've done a fellowship, you sit for your oral exams. And then after that, it's maintenance certification, which is 10 years, but soon to be 5 years. But don't worry, we've got that figured out to where you won't notice the difference for maintenance certification, which can be done in a number of ways. You can do a computer-based exam. You can do an oral exam. But more popular now is the WLA, a web-based longitudinal assessment, which has been picked up, is picking up. We're increasing the numbers of people participating in that each year. And so that's what's involved with board certification in the United States.
That's great. Now, I'm smart enough to know that sometimes we directors misstate things. So David Martin, did Dr. Azar get it right? Is there anything that you need to expand on?
No. Dr. Azar got it right. I think it might help to just talk about who the American Board of Orthopedic Surgery is. And we have a national board of directors, 20 orthopedic surgeons, practicing orthopedic surgeons, plus one public member. And they serve to set our policy, set our direction. And as Dr. Azar said, we have a written exam, then an oral exam based on an individual's own practice and cases. And then they enter a maintenance of certification program, which is a 10-year process divided into 5-year increments at this point. But that national board, 21 members, sets our policies and procedures. And then we have a staff of 14 full-time employees in Chapel Hill that carry out all those policies and procedures. So that's sort of the board. We have a full-time staff, and then we have a board of directors. And it's important to emphasize that they're practicing orthopedic surgeons and serve as volunteers, time away from their practice and families to help us self-regulate. And that's the other thing I would emphasize is physicians have been given the privilege of self-regulation. And we really want to take that seriously and continue to do that in the best way possible.
Yeah, that's the so-called social contract we have with society. As long as we endeavor to put their needs first, they will allow us to decide who gets into medicine, how we're evaluated, and how we're certified. I want to just ask one broad question before we get into the sort of the more details of the 90th celebration. And this is for any of you. What's the evidence for orthopedic surgeons who are listening? What's the evidence that individuals certified by any board worldwide delivers better care than somebody who's not, does not carry that certification?
Sure, I can take that. There is a growing body of literature that supports not only board certification, but maintenance of certification. Obviously, difficult studies to do because so many people are board certified. The large majority of physicians are board certified. But there are several recent studies that show that physicians who are board certified are less likely to have state medical licensure actions. And those that go through a recertification process not only are less likely to have medical licensure actions, but also have less severe state medical licensure actions. There are also a number of studies that support more costly care and care that more likely meets the standards of care. So again, those are hard studies to do, but there's a growing body of literature that supports that.
And on our website, abus.org, we have, I don't know, about a dozen of those articles, like that shows the across all specialties, some orthopedic surgery, some not, that of the research showing the value of MOC and board certification.
Thanks for that, David. I served as a consultant for the licensing board in Minnesota for, I don't know, two decades. And I can tell you for sure that the individuals coming to the attention of that body were more almost exclusively not certified by the ABOS. But now let's switch now to what you all are working so hard on is this 90 years of history of this board. So let me ask David Elstein, what's been planned? What's going on with this?
So we have a lot going on. One is we're working with you with JBJS on a supplement for later this year, really a true history of the ABUS, the history of the oral exams, the history of subspecialty and everything like that, because it's a lot of stuff that's been going on and things that people think are new, let's say peer review, have been going on for decades. So we want to do that, but for even little things, at the recent AAOS meeting, we gave out yo-yos that had our 90th anniversary special logo. We got rid of all of them. People loved having you. So if you're walking in the convention center in San Francisco, you can see orthopedic surgeons playing with a yo-yo. But we're just really trying to reach out our message. It's been 90 years of doing the right thing. We're going to have a special issue of our e-newsletter that goes to all diplomates. We have the history video we did a couple years ago. We're just publicizing again and really just getting the word out that, you know, ABUS has been around for 90 years. It's been doing the right thing, and just let everyone know about that.
Yeah, when you bring up that phrase, one can't help but remember our Dr. Martin's predecessor, Dr. Paul DeRosa, who, just a wonderful gentleman, so committed to the mission of the board. That was the title of the history that he wrote. What year was that put out, David Martin?
Wow, that's a great question. That was at the end of Paul DeRosa's run as the executive director, which was 13 years. So that was in the early 2000s, I guess.
I believe the title is 75 Years of Doing the Right Thing.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we got that. So we all miss Paul, great man, great friend, committed to the mission for sure. So Dr. Azar, what are your thoughts about this 90-year business? What have you got in mind here?
Well, we are going to bring together our former board members. You know, we hope to harness the collective knowledge and experience that they've had over those 10 years they served on the board. You know, what were the things that they thought really worked well? What didn't work well? You know, as we plan, look for the future of the ABOS, we want to have that knowledge, bring it all together and harness that. And that's what we hope to publish, something, this supplement in JBJS. We'll talk about the history. We'll talk about the House of Orthopedic Surgery, those who we collaborate with internally and externally, the ABMS, the Academy, the AOA, CORD, the ACGME. We're also going to have a discussion on DEI. We're also going to talk about technology. We're in a increasingly advancing technological world, and the ABOS always looks to innovate. What can we do to innovate? Technology is a big part of that. AI is a big part of that, the bigger part of that increasingly. And so we hope to try and bring everyone together to discuss that. At the end of the day, it's all about professionalism. The big theme here is professionalism, doing the right thing after 90 years. And so that's something that's really important to us. And we think bringing everyone together to discuss what we've done in the past and what we can do in the future to be better in all these areas would be really important for us as we plan to continue to carry out our mission, which is to protect the public.
Yeah. Well stated. And I certainly look forward to participating. But I feel obliged to inform everyone on the call and everyone listening that JBJS is excellence through peer review. So, you know, these articles are going to be peer reviewed. I hope they pass muster. I'm pretty sure they will. But it's not a straight pass through. You just don't send it in and it gets published. That's not the way it works.
Sure. We're on notice. We got it.
We know that. I would say, Mark, I would add a couple things. Paul DeRosa coined that phrase, 75 years of doing the right thing. A couple of recent directors that have rotated off the board, Dr. Tad Vail was one, and he said as he left, be proud, but not satisfied. And that's really sort of helped us focus the 90th. I mean, we want to continue to get better. And then Rick Wright is a recent board director who rotated off, and he said, you know, we need to continue to do the right thing, even when it's hard. And that's really what we want to try and focus on and harness the knowledge and experience of all of our former directors, our current directors, put that together and try and take another big step forward.
That's really, really well stated and really the right position. And I am aware, I've been involved in some of the discussions of how difficult it is at times when a very small vocal minority, not only in our field, but lately in the American Board of Internal Medicine, have taken issue with the fact that somebody's looking over their practice and what they're doing with a complete misunderstanding of what the role of the board is. And that's accountability. You take some shots, Davids and Dr. Azar, when you were on the board there, I'm sure you were pulled, you know, and when in your role at the academy, pulled aside on numerous occasions. What are you guys doing to us? You know, you're expensive, you're wasting our time, et cetera, et cetera. And those discussions are really, really difficult. And I commend the board for always taking the high road in these discussions and rather than just pure defensiveness, trying to educate individuals who just flat out aren't really aware of the social contract. So, Mo, do you have any last question for our esteemed guest?
Mark, can I add something to what you just said? Because
yeah, please.
You know, what you said, yes, we do hear the stuff, but that it truly is the minority. We're big in doing survey after survey, and hopefully not survey fatigue. But for instance, our longitudinal assessment, you know, people are not just doing because what the least bad choice, something like 75% of orthopedic surgeons take it said they've changed their practice because of that. And all our surveys show that people are getting benefit out of it. And that's sort of it's the goal of the ABOS is not just, you know, doing a test. It really is to add value to the surgeon's career. So I think that's something we are proud of. And what you say, yes, there are a minority, very small minority who are against it, but a large, large majority of people are positive about the ABOS and think that we are doing the right thing.
Thanks for that reminder. But the small minority is very vocal and consumes a lot of time for Dr. Martin. So Mo, any last questions for our guests?
Yeah, I have a simple one, actually. I mean, when you're looking back at an amazing 90 years, it's hard not to become reflective. But I also wonder, you know, what you see as the path forward as well for the ABOS. I mean, in a time when you're looking backwards, you're often looking forward. And so what does the future hold from your perspective?
You know, we're looking to uphold and enhance professionalism in our profession from residency to retirement. We recognize that what got us here is not going to get us where we need to be. And we continue to work to increase value and decrease burden for our diplomates. But this is all about the patients. That's who we serve. It's about patient care and the mission of protecting our patients. It's also about upholding professionalism in our profession. It's a privilege, like you said earlier, to police ourselves and to have board certification. It's a privilege to do that. And that's really important. The big issue in the future is really technology. And we want to innovate. And, you know, complacency is the eighth cardinal sin. We don't want to be that way. But technology, especially AI, poses some challenges, but we're looking for ways to turn those into opportunities. So that's a big part of the future. And we think that what we're trying to do, and hopefully in this supplement, we'll focus on our patients, which is our mission. We'll focus on professionalism. We'll focus on innovation and technology. And that's what we look to do when we to bring everyone together who've served in the past, who are serving right now on the board, and also as we look to produce this supplement for our diplomates to see that show the value of board certification.
That's great. Any one of the Davids have any last comments?
Well, I guess, you know, one thing sort of to get on Dr. Azar's point is, yes, the board continues to grow. And, you know, everyone here on the call took the Part 1 exam, took it in the basement of a hotel. And now you can take it not only in your location anywhere around the US, but around the world. The part two exam, you took it, you probably brought a suitcase of x-rays and documents. And now all that's uploaded from home and available on the computer. So I think, you know, the board is really trying to continue finding new ways to reduce burden, help find value in board certification and MOC, and continue to do that. So it's continue doing the right thing for another 90 years.
Dr. Martin, you get the last word.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I would echo the comments of Fred and David. I would say we learned an awful lot coming through the pandemic. Dr. Asar gets a lot of credit for being one of the leaders on the board as we learned some new things and new ways to continue to assess orthopedic surgeons, even under that stress. And we hope to apply some of those lessons. And I would also say we need to work together. We need to partner. JBJS has been a great partner and set a great example for other journals through our web-based longitudinal assessment program, the ABOSWLA. And we hope to continue to partner with JBJS in that way and other organizations. We really need to work together. What we do is a privilege, and we need to value that and take good care of our patients. So thanks.
Amen. Well, I'm sure this podcast will educate a lot of young surgeons in a lot of things, the history and the mission of the board. And thank you, gentlemen, for spending your time. Mo and I both apologize for getting the time slightly wrong, but in the end, it turned out great. Have a great day.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Bye. Bye-bye.